So we think that this very little letter was written somewhere between AD 60 and AD 80. So AD 60 is the earliest date it could be written, AD 80 is the latest. And it was most probably written actually by one of Jesus' brothers. You'll probably remember that in various places in the New Testament, there is a little list of Jesus' brothers. And Jude is one of them. He says, doesn't he, at the beginning, that he is James's brother. Well, we think that is James, the brother of Jesus, who led the church in Jerusalem. And he would have been worthy of note because he probably was one of the most famous leaders in the church at that time. Now, I need to put a caveat in with that, because if you were a Roman Catholic, you would have a very, very big problem with the authorship of this letter. Because for Roman Catholics, Jesus having brothers or sisters is very problematic because of their doctrine of the perpetual virginity of Mary. As one of my tutors once said to me, it's all about whether Mary had nookie, isn't it? And I was extremely embarrassed when he said it, but that is the crux of the problem for Roman Catholics. We don't have that problem. We tend to think that she was an ordinary woman that God chose to use in amazing ways, as in every other character in the New Testament and the Old Testament. But that's just to give you a little bit of background about who Jude might have been. And the passage we've looked at contained several things, didn't it? As Audrey picked out, it contains a reminder that Jesus is coming back, that time is not stretching out forever, that there is a time pressure on what we are doing and how we are sharing the gospel. And so with that, there's a very real warning to stay in step with the true gospel, to stay in step with the Spirit in verse 3. And then there's also, and most of the passage is about this really, a warning against dangerous leaders and influences, and that begins in verse 4. But there's also an example from Jude himself. You'll notice, and scholars make quite a big deal of this, that Jude is humble enough, if he is the brother of Jesus, not to use that as his credentials at the beginning of the letter. Now that makes it a bit more problematic for us, but it also shows what a humble character he was. If you were Jesus' brother or sister, I think I'd have a t-shirt made, wouldn't you? At least a badge. And yet Jude describes himself as the humble servant of Jesus and the brother of James. He's not claiming any extra inside knowledge because of his proximity to the earthly Jesus. That's something to note when we think about the kind of leaders that Jude then goes on to talk about. And also, he has a plea here for all who are truly in step with the Spirit, a desire for them to know all the benefits of the gospel. And that's important because it's quite negative what we're going to look at. What Jude has to say does not pull its punches, does it? You might have heard Pete reading that thinking, glory, that's tough stuff. And it is tough stuff, but we need to understand it with that background that Jude is writing this to a group of people that he dearly loves, who he longs for them to understand the fullness of the gospel, to live in the freedom of it. And the reason he's being tough is that these people who have slipped into the church and assumed places of influence are taking away from that initial freedom and from the glories of the gospel. So he does all that by warning against dangerous leaders and people who are a bad influence. I expect you probably remember, you know, as a child, one of your parents' biggest worries, isn't it, is that you're going to fall in with people who are a bad influence. You know, I can't be the only mother who sort of tries in vain to vet the friendships on the school gate because you're desperate. You know how important it is for your children to have friends who are a good influence, who build them up, who encourage them to do good things. Well, Jude wants nothing less for the church that he writes to. And Jude uses many examples, doesn't he, of people in the past who have fallen short, who show these behaviour characteristics of being a bad influence. And some of them we recognise and others sound very strange to us. But I think at the point that we're at in our nation and as a church, this is particularly relevant for us, isn't it? We've just been through a general election where no matter how many times people tell us it's about policies, we look at the people at the top of the party, don't we? We look at their examples of leadership, the kind of ideas that they're going to use their influence to spread. And we need to make good judgments about those people. And it's always relevant when we look at the leaders and the people of influence in the church. Many of you will know that I wrote my dissertation for my master's on celebrity ministers. And many of those are very good influences, but all of us will remember with a shudder those recent and in the past celebrity type leaders in the church who have fallen badly and caused all kinds of damage. Some of us will have painful memories of leaders of our own churches who have not been helpful, who have not been good influences. It's a position of power, isn't it? So I preach this sermon very much to myself and to my colleagues, only they're not here. But it's important that we recognise that any position of leadership is a position of power and influence. But it also speaks to our role as the body of Christ, because as the body of Christ, we are called to have influence in the world. And therefore, none of us are off the hook today as we look at this little letter from Jude. Well, the main thing that Jude wants to point out about these false leaders is they are offering something less than the gospel. They are offering cheap grace in verse 4, if you want to follow along, and it might be a good idea to have it open if you can. Cheap grace, as Bonhoeffer liked to point out very often, is always easier than the real gospel to preach. It's telling people what Paul describes, that lovely little catchphrase, it's telling them what their itching ears want to hear. It portrays a gospel that is all about being forgiven with no imperative to change and no mention of picking up our cross daily, which of course is what Jesus told us it would be like. It is dangerous because it sells people short, but it is attractive because it's so much nicer to hear, isn't it? And the leaders and influences that Jude warns about here are selling cheap grace. They are preaching a type of antinomianism. Now that's a big long word, isn't it? Antinomianism is a belief that because God offers grace and forgiveness, we no longer need to abide by any rules. You remember Paul says that line in Romans, shall we sin more that grace abound? You know, that idea that, well, God's just going to forgive us. That's great. I can go on out there and do whatever I like as long as I come back and ask for forgiveness. That is a real distortion of the gospel, isn't it? But it was also mixed in at the time with a very Gnostic belief, the Greeks were very Gnostic, and that was a belief that saw human beings as having two components, a very physical component and a very spiritual component. And the spiritual component was all good, and the physical component was all bad. And the handy thing about that view on life is that if your physical component is all bad, you can just let it do whatever it wants to do because it's going to go to hell anyway. And you can see, can't you, how the mixture of those beliefs would lead people into a lifestyle that let them do whatever they like with their bodies because their spirit was safe. And we might look at that with horror and think, how could you possibly live like that? That's a very weird way to look at the world. And yet, actually, we can fall into those traps too. We spend a lot of time here in Croxley preaching about whole life discipleship, We do that just because we are so prone, aren't we, to separating off our spiritual activities from our normal ones. Somehow seeing the things we do on Sunday or the things we do in home group as different to the things we do the rest of the week, of forgetting that the whole of our life is our discipleship. We preach integrity and self-awareness because being God's child means that we must be the same when no one is looking. We must be the same person when the only person who's watching is God. And we preach whole person morality because treating our bodies as God's temple is central to the Christian faith. Yes, we will get a new body one day. Thank goodness for that. But the body we are given is precious and God's temple. So Jude uses some illustrations to explain how easy it is to fall into many of these traps. He talks about the faithless Israelites and their lack of belief, those ones that came out of Egypt. Virtually all of them, apart from Caleb and Joshua, died in the wilderness because they didn't have enough belief. They kept straying away from God. Even God's chosen people can drift off and become out of step with the Spirit. He talks about fallen angels. Even being an angel doesn't keep you safe from poisonous influences. He talks about Sodom and Gomorrah and the sin of sexual predatory nature and using people. And we're fairly comfortable with all of those references, aren't we? But then we get this weird story about the Archangel Michael. Anybody heard that one? Anybody know where that one comes from in the Bible? No? Well, you won't, because it's not in there. That comes from an apocryphal source, according to Oregon, called The Assumption of Moses. And it's about a story about Oregon arguing, Archangel Michael arguing with the devil over the body of Moses. And the Archangel Michael is so careful not to slander anyone, not even the devil, that he refuses to curse even the devil. He says, I'll leave that up to God. So, you know, Michael is held up as a good example here, and we are reminded how dangerous slander is. Cain, well, I think we're all fairly familiar with what he did. He bumped off his brother because he didn't want to look bad. And Balaam, that's a cracking story if you want to find that in Numbers 22 to 24. Balaam and his talking donkey. Yeah, a talking donkey. Doesn't just happen in Shrek. Happens in the Bible. But both of those are guilty about ignoring God's voice to get financial reward. Korah is Numbers 16. He was guilty of really moaning against Moses, trying to undermine his leadership. And I'm afraid Korah came to a sticky end. He and his entire family were swallowed up in an earthquake. These things God takes seriously. And Jude sums them all up as shepherds who only feed themselves. And that's a reference to Ezekiel chapter 34, where there's a whole passage from the prophet that talks about the kind of leaders that God despises. Leaders who serve themselves. Leaders who feed themselves first. Leaders who don't look after the vulnerable sheep in their flock. God despises leaders like that. Beware the leader who looks to puff themselves up. God has no time for leaders like that. These are very serious sins, and most of them, in some small way, we can be guilty of. And it's not hard most of the time to see them in very extreme versions of themselves in other people. And yet, they can creep in. Verse 4, Jude says, they have secretly slipped in among you. These people haven't looked like baddies. They've looked like goodies, and people have listened to them, and they have been a terrible influence. So Jude gives us some metaphors to help us spot these unhelpful people. He talks about clouds without rain, blown along. Well, in a region where good rain made the difference between harvest or starving, clouds that look like rain and then don't deliver would have all the hope of a good harvest, and yet be full of disappointment. And leaders or people of influence who look as though they are full of importance and then fail to deliver anything nourishing are a serious problem. And we might think, you know, that image-conscious celebrities are a modern phenomenon, but Jude speaks right into this kind of leadership. To be a good leader or a good influence means that we should be nourishing those around us with life-giving stuff. Clouds which shed no rain are just things that block out the sun. And leaders who don't rain down life-giving teaching, an example for those they serve, do nothing but block people's view of the sun, S-O-N. Watch out for these people. Not only do they not deliver, but they are blown along by every wind of false teaching and fashion. Despite their appearance, they are lightweight and subject to other influences. Trees without fruit, uprooted, twice dead. Well, I know that many of you are really good gardeners, and some of you even have allotments. And so you will know that there is no room in a garden for a tree, a fruit tree, that doesn't bear fruit. Jesus was clear, wasn't he, about this particular metaphor? When he speaks about false teachers in Matthew 7, he says, "By their fruit you will know them." A lack of fruit suggests a lack of any link to the roots or to the true gardener. And fruitless trees can look very good, can't they? Shiny leaves, lovely trunks, strong branches. We've got a raspberry bush in our garden that when we first moved into the house, it produced a bumper crop. And every year it looks like it's about to do wonderful things. And I think last year we had about 4 raspberries on it. So this year it's on remand. If it doesn't produce, it's coming out. Bad leaders are just like this. They look good, and yet when autumn comes, there is no fruit. All their strong looks count for nothing. And Jude is very clear why. These fruitless trees are without roots. They die once the seed is planted, as all plants do, and then they die again because they lack roots in the spirit. And when we look for people to follow, we need to look for fruit in their lives. Are they a blessing to those around them? Are they showing the signs of the fruits of the Holy Spirit? Don't be swayed by a big ministry or a big following or lots of slots on God TV or any of the things that may come with a big ministry in our time. That's not the kind of fruit that Jude is talking about. He is referring to the fruit spelled out in Galatians, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. These are the things to look for in a leader or person of influence. They are not sexy, they will not get you a book deal, they will not get you on the telly. But they are the things that God looks for in a leader. Wild waves foaming up in shame. Well, in recent years, scientists have done a lot of work, haven't they, into how we can harness the power of the waves. We've recognised how powerful even just the normal tides are. Waves are relentless. They pound on the beaches of our island morning and night, whatever the weather. But waves can also be catastrophic when out of control. And instead of bringing resources, they can smash buildings, boats, and whole villages and lives. And wild waves tossed about by the wind are frightening and unpredictable. A leader or person of influence who is wild and unpredictable is a dangerous thing. And Jude warns against such people and the destruction that they bring. We need to look for people in leadership who are steady. Who are not blown about by the latest thing. Who are not prone to anger. Who are steady. Lastly, Jude talks about wandering stars, no use for navigation. Well, I'm not at all good at looking at the stars. The rest of my family are pretty good at that, so I'd have to be with one of them if I was going to get lost. But if I had to rely on navigating by the stars on my own, I would stay lost. And yet that's exactly, isn't it, how people have found their way through the unknown for thousands of years. And Jude knows that life is complex, that often it is frightening and unknown. And what we need to get through these times are fixed points of reference, not deceptive wandering stars. People who hold on to the truth, not those who move with fashion. And so just so that we can be really wise in spotting these disappointing and dangerous leaders, Jude also gives us another big clue in verse 16. And he warns us that they will also be grumblers, fault finders, boasters and smooth talkers. My goodness, that's a bit of a worry, isn't it? We can all do a bit of grumbling every now and again, can't we? We can all find it easy to find fault with one another. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who can be prone to a bit of boasting every now and again, and a bit of smooth talking when life requires it. And yet Jude says, be careful. These are habits that can grow. Be careful of the person that does this a lot. It's not a very happy picture, is it? I'm sure we've all experienced some people like this at some point in our lives. But more importantly, how do we avoid becoming these people? How do we ensure that we are gospel people who are in step with the Spirit? Well, this is a huge challenge to any of us in any leadership or position of influence. It's why the inner life of a leader is so important, because it's so easy to lose touch with who you are on the inside and just live in the falseness of who you are on the outside. I've been away on retreat this week. Very nice experience. I went down to stay with my old mentor who's opened a retreat house. And partly I go just to be on my own and to be with God, but partly I go because she's the kind of mentor that if you're being a real wally, she'll point it out. We need people like that. We need time on our own with God. We need to be able to look at ourselves on the inside, honestly. And we need people in our lives who will point out if we're being silly or if we're on the wrong path, or if we're out of step with the Spirit. But this isn't just a challenge if we are a leader, because this is a challenge to everyone who is a disciple of Jesus. Because God is clear that all those who are disciples of Jesus, we are part of the only rescue plan that God has for the world. And if we get out of step, the world has no other hope. But today is Father's Day. And so I particularly also want to point out that fathers are people of influence and leadership. And therefore fathers need to take this on board too. Being a dad is a wonderful responsibility. It is a joy and a privilege, but it is also a daunting task. Just like Spider-Man, being a dad holds great power and also great responsibility. Being a dad does not mean that we need to be perfect, but being a fruitful presence in our children's lives is imperative. Sadly, for some of us, the experience of a father who promised much but doesn't deliver like a rainless cloud is all too familiar. Our streets, particularly our inner cities, are full of young men for whom this is a damaging and painful truth. Gang culture and violence thrives where dads are absent. But being a present, honest, loving, encouraging dad, that is a powerful thing. Being there even when we are far from perfect brings forth fruit. It produces children and adults who know they are loved and are able to be generous to others in the richness of that love. Children who have had a dad who can also point them to Jesus have double blessings in life. But this message isn't just for dads. As the Church of Jesus, we have an incredible responsibility to be people of influence. I watched on the news briefly this morning how one of the bishops in London has orchestrated a meeting between the Prime Minister and those people displaced in that tower. Where government was lacking, the church used influence to bring about good. We have a role to play to be a good influence, and that can be incredibly powerful. We had a carpenter round to our house this week to mend a kitchen cupboard for us. And as he walked through the door, Alan realised that he knew him from, he was a musician from who does open mic nights down at the Coach and Horses, and we go every now and again, and Alan contributes to that, and we're getting to know some people from outside the church down there, and it's great. And Lee, this carpenter, was one of those musicians. But we also picked up that Lee's little boy comes to Boys Brigade here. And we had a good conversation about that. Because Lee's little boy's got quite a few problems. And from what I can see, Lee is an amazing dad. But what he said about Boys Brigade really, really struck me. He said, "You know what? My little boy's got loads of problems. But when he walks through the door of your Boys Brigade, he knows that he is loved and accepted." That is incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful. And that's just one of the things we can do as the body of Christ in this place. And in offering that nourishing rain for that little boy as he walks through the door of Boys Brigade, those clouds are not empty, those fruit trees are not fruitless. He is nourished and loved and rained upon with blessings. That is powerful. And we share that only because Jesus is the only one that can share that. We have something completely unique to offer the world, and it is vital that we do it together, that we are people of influence together, that we are clouds that do hold rain, that we are trees that do bear fruit. And at the heart of the gospel are ways of being which enrich, feed, guide, and save those around us. And we can choose to be those sorts of people if, as Jude says right at the beginning of his letter, we stay close to the God who calls us and loves us. And if we are prepared to be kept by Jesus, if we want to be those fruitful trees, we need to be rooted in Jesus. This is not a passive thing, far from it. And if we are to avoid the terrible pitfalls of cheap grace and the sins of self-aggrandizement and vacuous living and leading, we need to decide on costly grace every day, picking up our cross daily, preferring others' needs before our own, living by God's agenda, not our own, being prepared to go to the world and not expect them to come to us all the time. We need to use this building, but we also need to break out of this building. We can be leaders and people of influence who literally bring life-saving rain, fruit, power and guidance to a world in trouble. Are we willing to get out there and be those people? I pray that we are. Well, Audrey's going to lead us in our last hymn and our blessing. But as we sing, I'm going to pass around a basket. And if you're a gentleman here today, we'd like you to take an acorn as your Father's Day gift. It's very small. But it's a reminder of the fruit that we can place in other people's lives. And if you're a dad, then that might well be your children. I pray it is. But we have all sorts of relationships, all of us. And it's up to us to be those fruitful leaders that Jude describes. And I pray that we will. So take your acorn, maybe keep it in your pocket. Keep it as a reminder of the fruitfulness that God calls us to.